How much time do we find?
On a Fridays we take off.
Not on Friday. But when there's nothing major happening on a Friday, we take a Friday for the children. I take a Friday for the children and for the husband.
Would you want any of your children to go into politics as well?
Not really. I think it's a very tough life. And since my father was in jail, and I was in jail, and my mother was in jail, and my husband was in jail, and my brother's in jail, I think the last thing I'd want is my babies to be in jail. No? No babies? But every child must make up their own minds about what they want to do.
On this particular Friday, two members of the Bhutto clan are missing. Benazir's mother and her brother, Murtaza. He's locked up in a nearby jail. The mother, Nusrat, is taking care of his affairs in his absence. Twice a week, Nusrat used to drive his wife and children to see him in his cell. Benazir could have intervened to secure her brother's release. She did nothing. Branded a terrorist by General Zia's regime, Murtaza thought it would be safe to return from exile once his sister was in power. He was immediately arrested. He had, it's true, made the mistake of disclosing his political ambitions, which sparked off a bloody war of succession between brother and sister. Pakistan was born in the bloodbath that accompanied partition in 1947. It has never really known stability. The country is made up of disparate communities that have only Islam in common. And the idealism of Pakistan's founding fathers was not enough to eradicate poverty. As in all the Indian subcontinent, the people have adapted. But beneath this apparent calm is a country always on the brink of chaos. Here, life is a daily battle. The birth rate is among the highest in the world, and so is the death rate. 130 million men and women try to survive as best they can in these appalling conditions. Civil disorder is already rife. The Kalashnikov is a common weapon, openly sold in the shops of Peshawar on the border with Afghanistan. The government has even had to ban it from weddings because shots fired in celebration were killing many people. And this is only the tip of the iceberg. Pakistan has a huge arms market. Since the Afghan war, you can buy any kind of weapon here, even anti-aircraft missiles. Drug trafficking is growing in an area which already provides much of the world's heroin. And the Afghan war created hundreds of thousands of refugees who are further undermining the economy. In this unhealthy atmosphere, violence has spread throughout the country. But in the face of these perils, Benazir does have qualities which her opponents lack. Her charisma, her beauty, her familiarity with the West. Thanks to her father, she came into contact with heads of state even as a child. She has influential friends in Washington, London, and Bonn. And at a time when fundamentalism is spreading in many parts of the world, she represents the modern face of Islam. Her country supported the Allies against Saddam Hussein during the Gulf War. Benazir Bhutto's charm makes her a good ambassador for Pakistan, which needs investment and support from countries like Germany to emerge from its economic crisis. Benazir's diplomatic offensive is vital for her country, not least because Pakistan has lost its strategic importance for the West since the withdrawal of Soviet troops from Afghanistan and the end of the Cold War. But Benazir is less popular at home than abroad, even among women, seen here demonstrating against an increase in the price of flour, a staple food for Pakistanis.
We want to ask
the Prime Minister and the party in power, how do they make their own budget and what is their budget? And whatever is their budget is the right of the common man as well.
During her first term as Prime Minister, Benazir didn't or couldn't reform society. This time, she wants to leave her mark, especially by improving the situation of women. They have long been victims of discrimination and violence. Now they have their own police.
As a Muslim woman, I feel particularly committed to other women, Muslim women and non-Muslim women, and to show that a woman in an Islamic world can build a system which is fair and just to women. And that is why we've taken several steps. First, I set up a women's development bank, which is only run by women. They're only women employees. And it gives loans only to women, small loans. And we've seen a lot of businesses come up in Pakistan due to the women's bank giving small loans. Secondly, we've inaugurated the first women's police station, which will investigate crimes against women, because there were cases of women being raped in confinement, either police custody or jail custody. To stop that and to have a more sympathetic investigation of women's cases, we've set up a separate women's police station. We're also going to set up separate women's courts headed by women judges to try cases of divorce, child custody, adultery, domestic violence, etc.
It's an ambitious program. At the High Court in Lahore, there is not yet a single female lawyer, let alone judge. In Pakistan, there are two separate worlds. In big cities like Karachi, Islam coexists with a Western way of life, and women there are free to choose whether to observe Islamic tradition. In the villages, where most of the people live, age-old traditions persist. Women only take off their veils in front of their families.
In the interior where I come from, the man goes to work on the field and the woman sits home and does all the work otherwise. Looks after the house, looks after the animals, makes sure that the husband gets the food at the right time, the children leave for school. It's just a different role here.
The fundamentalists want a return to traditional ways. For them, it's heresy to have a woman head of government, as this fundamentalist leader explains.
Women is physically is not strong as men. He cannot command in field, in war, or cannot command in factories or in fields, such as. There's a strong thing, burden such things have given the government to the men.
Benazir has proved the opposite by going to Sarajevo with her Turkish opposite number, Tansu Siller. And others are following her example. Bangladesh, too, now has a woman leader.
The fact that we three have been elected within 5 years shows that within the Islamic world, there are two distinct trends. One, where people seek change through clerical Islam and the mosque. Two, where people seek change through the ballot, through the vote, and in the belief that law and freedom are the paths to pursue. I feel the success of these three countries is extremely important to the success of constitutionalism, freedom in the world of Islam. I believe that fundamentalism is on the decline.
Yet the crisis in Pakistan's neighboring state of Kashmir in India threatens to give fresh impetus to fundamentalism. The Muslims, who are in majority there, are demanding independence. And the conflict is drawing to Pakistan Mujahideen from all over the world. They bring with them the risk of spreading fundamentalism. The military top brass are encouraging Benazir to toughen her stance towards India. Pakistan is already waging a hidden war against its neighbor. Any escalation would be dangerous, reinforcing the army's power at Benazir's expense.
Just as one hope was that if everything goes wrong, the Islamic system will take over, there is the other hope that if the democratic system collapses, well, at least the army will take over, even though people have seen the disastrous consequences of that. But still, they feel all right, at least, if nothing else, we'll have law and order. It will take them some time to see through that hoax also that the army rule won't produce order, sanity, and certainly not lead to any kind of progress in any field.
For now, the army is letting civilians rule, but its power hinders the democratic process. The army also swallows up more than a third of the national budget. Pakistan has the capability to make nuclear bombs, but it cannot provide all its people with drinking water. Some say that even as a student at Oxford, Benazir thought politics was her destiny, that she already believed she would succeed her father. Her closest friend at Oxford says that this was not true.
She actively became interested in politics in her own country by default. And when she went back to Pakistan after Oxford, she really genuinely intended to go into Pakistan's foreign service. She'd stayed an extra year at Oxford to do that. She'd done a foreign service program, and that was her aim. And probably if events hadn't unrolled as they did, she may well have been an ambassador somewhere now.
Whether it was duty or ambition that led Benazir to Prime Minister House, there's no doubt she has developed a taste for power, though that power is now being challenged by an unexpected adversary, her own brother.